This is KUT. I'm David Brown of the Texas Standard. We're just a little more than a month away from Election Day, and as candidates stake out what they hope will be winning positions, a new nonpartisan survey by the nonprofit Texas Lyceum offers perhaps the most vivid insights yet on what issues matter most to Texans as they prepare to head to the polls. Darren Shaw conducted the survey. He's a professor of government at the University of Texas at Austin. Thanks so much for coming in.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Before we get to these issues, you have some new numbers from the Lyceum poll on who's ahead in the governor's race, lieutenant governor's race, and some of these other issues that are sort of playing out in the political scene at large. First, I would assume that your numbers show Greg Abbott, the attorney general, ahead in the governor's race.
Yes, that's in fact the case. We've got Abbott up by a 9-point spread over Senator Wendy Davis, 49-40 with about 8% undecided. We did include everybody who's going to be on the ballot was listed in the poll, so people had an opportunity to basically get a preview of what they're going to be asked to do in early voting and in November. The numbers varied about the same way as you would expect them to. Democrats, 86% support Davis. Republicans, 85% support Abbott. Abbott has a slight lead with independents, about 6 points. A couple things that I think are a little bit surprising, maybe. Abbott actually has a small lead amongst women. 46 to 44. That's all women. His lead amongst Anglo women is considerably larger. And there's been a lot of talk, especially from the Abbott people, about his support amongst Hispanics and some of their goals there. And we show, actually, that he's performing in kind of a middling range for Republicans with Hispanics. We've got Abbott at 26 and Davis at 62 with the remainder committed to others or undecided.
Let's go back to that 9-point figure there. Does that sound like the kind of lead that Abbott should have in red state Texas at this point in the election season?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I've been talking with some of my friends and colleagues, and our assumption at this point, I think if you take the last three or four midterm elections, the average Republican share of the vote is about a plus 12 to plus 15 over the Democrats. So I think it's fair to say that Davis is slightly overachieving compared to a generic Democrat in a state where Republicans do very well. On the other hand, this is an interesting race. I think Abbott is being treated as something of an incumbent when he's not.
Interesting.
You don't have George W. Bush or Rick Perry at the head of the ticket, which right. I think kind of creates a double problem for Democrats. You know, they not only face kind of a tough sledding in terms of party and ideology in the state, but they're running against really well-known, well-recognized incumbents. One of the things that Davis has going for her is that she's, for a challenger for Democrats, she's well-known.
Yeah.
She and Abbott are about the same level when it comes to name recognition. And I think that's a little bit of the explanation for why she's, not, I don't know that she's within striking distance, but she's doing a little better than one might expect, I think.
And we should mention what is the plus or minus deviation
sure,
here?
Sure. The poll, just a couple of details for those of you who are inclined towards that sort of stuff. The poll was in the field September 11th through the 25th, so about 15 days. It's what we call a slow burn. We actually took our opportunity to actually contact the people that had been selected.
So this is a telephone survey.
Yes, live interviewers, not an automated poll. It's not an online poll. It's a live interviewer probability sample. 1,000 Texas adults. The Lyceum is, of course, interested in the attitudes of all Texans, adult Texans, that is. We had 837 of the 1,000 adults said that they were registered to vote. And then we whittled it down a little bit to 666. I swear there's no significance to that number. That's simply the number who got through our likely voter screen. Ended up being about 666. I'd love to round to 667, but we can't. So it creates a margin of error off of our ballot estimates. Mm-hmm. And our ballot estimates here are amongst the likely voters.
Right.
Of about 3.5 points, plus or minus 3.5.
Got it. Let's move on to the lieutenant governor's race. I think a lot of pundits, just looking at the performance in the debates, might tell you that Leticia Vandepoot would be doing a little bit better than Wendy Davis, just looking at the performance in the debates. And again, we're just talking about general punditry here. How do the numbers shake out?
Well, she's trailing in our poll 47 for Patrick, 33 for Vandepoot.
Wow.
So down 14 points. And I think your intuition is interesting because Patrick's committed level of support, 47, is actually lower than Abbott's, 47 to 48. But Vandeputte's only drawing 33, whereas Wendy Davis was drawing 40.
Name recognition, you think?
I think a lot of it is name recognition. You see higher levels of undecideds in this race. We have 14% undecided in the light gov race as opposed to 5 or 6 in the governor's race.
Right.
You know, so I think you can't really underestimate the value that the filibuster and that the attention that Wendy Davis enjoyed last summer has had for her campaign. It's that stuff money can't buy.
Yeah.
And you see that with the other Democrats on the statewide ballot. They have a hard time making up that kind of ground.
So some other numbers that have just been released by the Lyceum poll. You've done some comparisons between Texas Governor Perry and President Obama in terms of appeal. What are you finding there?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. Perry has been around, oh my gosh, how many,
longest serving
14,
governor
15
for sure,
years
in
at this
Texas
point.
History.
Right. And, you know, you would think that would bring a lot of baggage. And there have been times when Perry's approval has seemed to dip a little bit. And I think the vultures come out and people sort of assume the end is near. But we actually show Perry's approval numbers basically unchanged from the last couple of times we've done the survey. So amongst all adults, so again, let's move back to the entirety of Texas, we have 55% job approval. And amongst registered voters, he's drawing 57% job approval. So he's still above water, as they say.
Right.
And the Republicans are obviously keeping him afloat. He's got 88% support amongst Republicans. Democrats, you know, more or less overwhelmingly disapprove, 65% disapproval there. So, but his number, you know, you would think with the controversies and with even if you're just doing nothing but making decisions as governor, you're making enemies. That's the conventional
that's
wisdom,
the
right?
Yeah.
But he seems to maybe it's that we've all made up our minds on Rick Perry a long time ago.
Interesting.
And there's just not much movement there. The president, I think you look at the numbers and he's slightly underwater. Amongst all adults, he's 48% approve, 50% disapprove. So
I find those numbers remarkable because nationally, I think he's perceived as having, you know, something like what, in the 30% range, something
he's,
like that?
He's in the low 40s now, and there have been a lot of individual polls that have shown him with 38, 39% disapproval.
Uh-huh.
And so you're right.
So what accounts for the fact that he seems to be doing better in Texas?
Well, the first thing is that when we have a poll of all adults, you know, so for instance, in Texas, if you're talking about all adults, 34-35% of our sample is Hispanic, which is a good constituency for the president. The percentage of African Americans is slightly higher in the adult sample compared to the registered voter sample, and then higher still than the likely voter sample.
Mm-hmm.
But I think even if you shrink it down, if you go to the registered voter sample, we have 44% approve, 53% disapprove. Now, okay, he's a little underwater, but that's still very comparable to the national numbers. And Texas is, you know, by reputation, indeed, a deep red conservative state. So I'm with you. I think it's interesting that the president doesn't seem to have fallen much compared to our previous polls. And he seems to be doing about as well as he is nationally. You know, the nation split 50-50. Texas doesn't seem to be. And yet, you know, the president's only slightly underwater here.
You made a reference to the many scandals that have surrounded Governor Perry of late, and I guess one of the biggest is this indictment. And I don't know how to characterize this indictment, but abuse of power as governor, and some people have characterized it as just the use of veto power. Others have said that, in fact, he was heavy-handed and broke the law. So, how are voters or potential voters viewing this issue of Governor Perry's indictment?
Well, we asked, first of all, have you even heard of this?
Mm-hmm.
Which is something we're always struck by how few people have heard of political issues when we actually ask them. Here we've got 65% of Texans said they've heard at least something about the indictment,
right.
So two-thirds roughly. I'm not quite sure what the other one-third are doing. They were on vacation. On a media blackout, I'm not sure. So we asked two questions after that. We basically asked guilt or innocence, or too early to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we found 22% think the governor's guilty, 28% think he's innocent, and 43% say it's too early to tell.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we had that sort of, what do you know, based on what you know, what do you think? We also asked, though, do you think it's just a political stunt, or is it legitimate criminal activity? And here we found that 72% thought that it was just a political witch hunt, basically.
Interesting.
Now, you know, you could argue that the governor and his staff have been effective in framing it, or you know, that people are notably cynical about politics anyway, and this just makes their radar go up when they hear something like this. Either way, the governor's version of the story seems to have penetrated the public.
And yet, there seems to be a sizable margin in there. I believe you said 40-something percent, whose minds are not made up on his guilt or innocence, still waiting to hear the evidence, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, additional revelations, who knows what what happens.
Let's talk about some of the issues that Texans say are the most pressing. As I mean, one way you did that, you asked them what is the most pressing issue facing the state, and you also asked them about most pressing issue facing the nation. And I thought that was fascinating the way that Texans responded there. First, the most pressing issue facing the state survey says,
well, border security and immigration. This is an open-ended question, so we didn't provide them with response options. You know, we just said, what's the most important problem facing Texas? And we asked our interviewers to separately code immigration and illegal immigration and border security. And what we found is 18% offered immigration or illegal immigration as the top issue facing the state. 13% said border security. So combined, 31% said immigration or border security. Now, by comparison, you look at the economy, which we coded separate from unemployment and jobs.
Right.
So let's take a look. Unemployment and jobs, 6% said that's the biggest issue facing the state. Only 2% said the economy.
That's remarkable. Well, I guess, I mean, this is something that a lot of Texas officials are touting, the Texas miracle and all this sort of thing. So perhaps that's what factors in there. But what about in terms of the nation? What did they perceive?
It's absolutely the opposite. And if you ask about the most important problem facing the company, the country, 15% said the economy. That was our top response option. Another 5% said unemployment and jobs. So you bundle those two together, you get 20%. One out of five saying the economy, jobs. Immigration pops up 8%. Border security, 3%. So you flip it. It's basically 11% saying this is the most important issue facing the country, whereas the economy kind of dominates. But at the state level, people are focusing on immigration and border security, which I find really interesting given, you know, that we're still going through this slow recession, slow recovery.
Yeah. What do you think accounts for this? Does this have to do with the way that the nightly news reports issues of immigration and that sort of thing, a perception of how close our proximity to Mexico and all that? Why do you think that things are playing out the way that they are?
Yeah, it's a real good question. I wonder, you know, if you ask at the national level, the economy, this is a axiomatic in political science, right? When the economy gets even mildly stalls or slows, or you know, enter into something like a recession, the economy dominates everything. And I don't know whether it's the news media covers it and people pick it up, or the news media perceives that people are feeling it and so they gear their coverage that way.
Right.
Well, you know, the chicken and egg aspect, I don't have much insight into, but there's clearly a sense that when the economy begins to stall out, everything else is just on page two. The other side, which you just posed, and I'm not sure about this, is the extent to which state-level coverage really focuses on immigration, and local coverage focuses on immigration or illegal immigration or border security. A lot of that lately, you know, certainly this summer, it was a dominant issue.
The children.
The children on the border.
Undocumented kids.
Yeah, unaccompanied children on the border. But you know what? We've seen this in the Lyceum polls across the seven or so that we've done before. At the state level, immigration and border security continually pops up. Even in 2009, after the recession hit, this was one of it was on par with the economy as a state problem back in 2009. And you know, I have a lot of anecdotes for it. I mean, I've done some focus groups in different parts of the state, and one of the things that you see is that when the economy begins to sputter at the state level, people really focus on immigration and, in particular, the resources that they believe are being, you know,
taken away,
right. and in particular, emergency services and public education.
Well, this is sort of a classic when it comes to immigration in the United States. I mean, this is part of our history.
And you know, it's interesting. I don't know the extent to which that's a legitimate claim or not. But I do think it's interesting that people are very, especially in Texas. We've done some focus groups in the Metroplex and in Houston. And they don't blame immigrants for everything. They're not talking about crime. They're not talking about feeling unsafe. They're absolutely focused like a laser on what they believe to be the resources that are sucked up by immigrants in their local communities, and they're particularly sensitive to it when there are budget issues. So, you know, for better or worse, accurate or not, that seems to be a, there's a connection between the economy and illegal immigration, so that it, you know, even when the economy pops up, immigration continues to be on the minds of Texans. You know, and when the economy fades, then you've got, you know, these sorts of issues down the board that draw a lot of media attention.
Well, there's another thing that's striking about this. I believe that the last Lyceum poll, unless I'm mistaken, the number one issue of, facing Texas in the minds of respondents was education.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So you think about how, what sort of practical impact this might have in November. I mean, Attorney General Greg Abbott, the Republican in the gubernatorial contest, is making border security a big deal in his campaign. Wendy Davis is hitting hard on education. So if you're a political consultant, do you pull Wendy Davis aside and say, look, you need to change tack on this?
Well, we've got the numbers run by partisans. And what we find is that Abbott is speaking to his constituents here. Amongst Republicans, 27% of Republicans said immigration was the number one issue.
Mm-hmm.
Another 22% said border security.
Wow.
So 49% of Republicans.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, absolutely. On the Democratic side, 13% said immigration and 3% said border security. So 16% of Democrats said this. 17% said education was their number one issue. So you can make an argument that Davis's focus is correct, at least amongst her constituents. But even there, 16 to 17, you know, she clearly needs to be saying something about immigration. And it's not clear that her constituents are as fired up or as united, even in what they think ought to be done with respect to immigration as Abbott's.
You know, one of the things about polls is how they fuel popular expectations about what might happen in November. And you know, we know that there are inherent limitations. I mean, the classic line is that this is just a snapshot in time.
Snapshot in time.
Right?
Yeah, that's our go-to line.
So how are we as listeners, as consumers of this data, how are we supposed to process these findings? What does this all tell us?
Yeah, it's a great question, and the kind of question that pollsters ought to be aware of as they, you know, do this sort of thing. I'm a big believer in the notion that people don't walk around thinking about politics very much. It's not what they do. They're very polite. If you ask them a question, they'll think about it and they'll formulate an answer. And that means you have a lot of responsibility as a pollster to provide them with appropriate information, with balanced information. I admit that in a lot of instances, I think people are constructing opinions on the spot. You know, and
you mean while they're talking with the person on the other end of the line.
Now if it's a presidential ballot question, they probably know what they think.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a question like abortion, a public policy issue where they've thought about it before,
right?
Less so. You know, they probably have some attitudes. But on questions like you know, the Perry indictment or the Central American refugee crisis, children on the border, I don't know that they have well thought out opinions. And I think, you know, your obligation as a pollster is to say, okay, you know, here's what we're going to talk about. Here's what one side says. Here's what the other side says. What do you think? And I think some people would, you know, there are people who don't approve of that. They'd rather just ask a yes, no. I think you have to admit what we all know when we've done a lot of polling, and that is that politics isn't number one on people's list of things. And I think the proper way to deal with that is to try to give them the information that they would have when they go to the polls. For instance, in a ballot question, we always put all of the candidates who are going to be on the ballot. If the party is listed on the ballot, which it is in Texas, we put the party in the question. You know, we try to replicate their actual experience as much as possible. That's a long-winded way of saying that I think opinion is ephemeral on a lot of these things. It changes with new information. It changes as people use different considerations to construct opinions. And those considerations are influenced by the news of the day, by conversations they have. So when you get to the public policy items, I think they do reflect what people believe today. But information is always coming available and context changes and times change. On the ballot numbers, less so. I think, you know, partisanship structures, their basic attitudes.
Right, right.
You know, for instance, in Davis's, in the Davis-Abbott race, you know, we've got her down 9 points. There's a margin of error, obviously. But I can't think of many cases in which a candidate has been down 9 points, especially running uphill,
right?
You know, in a conservative Republican state, making up 9 points is awfully tough.
Yeah.
You know, so in the ballot numbers, I think it's probably not real welcome news for the Democrats. And it'll be tough for them to do much about that.
You've been conducting this survey for some time, and we all know the story of, you know, voter turnout, especially in local elections. Do you ever, this is just sort of a personal question for you, as you do these surveys and you get the feedback, you know, in terms of how much people have actually invested in thinking about these things, are you encouraged by how much people are plugged in to what's going on in the democratic process, or discouraged? Or, I mean, I would think it'd be kind of hard not to be a little cynical about some of this stuff.
Yeah, I would distinguish between skepticism and cynicism.
All right, fair enough. Yeah,
but I always do with my students, so I might as well pose that mini point on you. Yes and no is to the question of am I discouraged. Anybody who's done any kind of research in public opinion, one of the first things you come across is the indifference of most people to politics. They've got other things in their lives. They're just not that engaged. You know, when you get some 30% who can't identify the vice president of the United States, it kind of makes you wonder. And of course, there's the old Jay Leno, now Jimmy Fallon routine where they ask people about events that haven't occurred.
Right.
On the other hand, people aren't stupid. And as I said, they're doing the best they can. They don't prioritize politics very highly. I actually find that there seems to be more intensity in a lot of ways, more knowledge about very localized campaigns than there is about statewide or national campaigns. You know, so for instance, I'm over in Lost Creek in Austin, and we've had annexation debates and, you know, the establishment of a limited utility district as the annexation goes on. And, oh my gosh, the intensity of the information campaigns and the decision-making process. And, you know, we had over 50% turnout in the election about this establishment of a district. That was actually very encouraging. And in a lot of ways, it makes sense in that those neighborhood fights are immediate. They're close. You feel the impact of how they're resolved. I do wish people felt that way more about, you know, Austin City elections, about Travis County, about Texas and national elections. It would be nice. And I do think ultimately those sorts of decisions and elections are as important and do affect them. It's just less immediate, less proximate, and so people don't pay as much attention.
Political analyst and pollster Darren Shaw. He oversees the Texas Lyceum poll, and he's a professor of government at UT Austin. Thank you so much for coming in and talking about these numbers. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
I'm David Brown of the Texas Standard, KUT News.